3. I'm James Spann with the Alabama Weather Network on Tide 100.9. It's 54 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
The Gary Harris Show. You see him host Tide or Insider TV. Crimson Tide Kickoff. Play-by-play for Alabama sports and sports director for WVUA 23. It's time for the Gary Harris Show on your home for Alabama sports. Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome into the Gary Harris Show for this Wednesday, October 29th, 2 days away from Halloween and the final day of October. We're about to be into November. And since Sunday, we have been getting some seasonal weather. In fact, you know, I've talked a lot about wanting some rain. Well, now we've had some rain. So let's go back to some cool and nice sunshine. How about that? Not the beating down heat, but some sunshine would be nice. But in the meantime, we're dealing with more showers this morning, but we got a great show on tap for you today, so we're looking forward to it. I'm Gary Harris. Chase Brumfeld's right there on the other side of the glass, manning the controls and taking your phone calls on the Gary Harris Show hotline at 205-342-9904. We got a good show on tap. I'm going to run it down for you in just a second. First, though, I need to tell you, as always, this hour of the Gary Harris Show is being brought to you by Alabama Credit Union. Member-owned and not-for-profit, it really is just a better way of banking. I encourage you to find out more at alabamacu.com. Spend your time living, not banking. Find the perfect account to make life easier. You can do that at Alabama Credit Union. Alabama Credit Union. Find out more at alabamacu.com. Alabama Credit Union loans for real life. Some rules and restrictions do apply. See if you're eligible for membership, then join today and feel good about your money. And put a little extra change in your pocket. All right, here is the lineup for today. Matt Coulter on NASCAR coming up at 9:30. Then Larry the Music Man, we're moving him up to 10 this morning because I've got just a, you couldn't even see it unless you were looking for it, but I got this little small chip on one of my front teeth. So I'm going to get that bonded in this morning at 11, so I'm going to be leaving a little bit early. I'm probably going to be getting out here about 10:30 this morning, and so we'll have a live show up until 10:30, and then at 10:30, Chase is going to play one of the great interviews we've had earlier this week, probably Corey Reamer from yesterday, the Crimson Tide Sports Network sideline reporter, former Alabama outside linebacker, 2009 national champion, and then we'll close out the show and but that was a great interview, and we'll probably play that one, although I'll leave it up to Chase's discretion based on what the time looks like. But so I'll be here until 10:30 this morning, so we got a good show on tap. As I said, if you want to join the program, 205-342-9904 is that number. Some news and notes, headlines, if you will. Blue Jays are a resilient team after losing that 18-inning game the night before to the Dodgers, 6-5. They bounced back and beat Shohei Ohtani last night, 6-2. So the World Series is now dead even at 2-2. It's a best of three. And what that does is, even if the Dodgers win tonight, we're going back to Toronto regardless for game six. Either the Blue Jays will be up 3-2 or the Dodgers will be up 3-2. Obviously, if the Blue Jays are up 3-2 going home for game six and seven, if necessary, they'll be in a much better position than the Dodgers. If the Dodgers are up 3-2, they've still got to win a game in Toronto to win the World Series. But that's nothing new for the Dodgers. The Dodgers have only clinched a World Championship one time, or have it at home since 1963. Their other World Series wins have all come, believe it or not, on the road. So you've got that happening. Alabama football, of course, being on bye, it's a little bit slow this week. Crimson Tide, though, you know, taking a little bit of time off, but getting back to practicing some this week here. I don't have the schedule in front of me. I know they practice tomorrow. They may practice today as well, but they'll be getting some work in. And then, of course, next week they get back into the full-fledged game mode. Let's see if I've got the schedule right here. Yeah, they're practicing this morning, and then they practice tomorrow morning. And then they're off for a few days after that on Friday and Saturday. So getting some work in today and tomorrow, then off Friday and Saturday. So Alabama football, then, of course, you know, Sunday they'll be in, and then they get into their game week and get ready for LSU. Frank Wilson, the new interim head coach for LSU, met with the media yesterday afternoon and said that, you know, his goal is to get this team to the finish line. and have them play good football and have guys want to do all the things that they would want to do, you know, for a permanent head coach. And that starts with beating Alabama. So this guy's been around the LSU program on a couple of different occasions. He's from New Orleans. He's got a great reputation as a recruiter in that state. And you have every reason to believe that that the fans down there will respond to him and the players will as well. So, all right, we also, Greg Sankey, and I agree with this 110%, that NCAA approving that deal that college athletes can bet on pro sports. Don't need to be doing that. And Greg Sankey has, and the SEC has come out against that, and they really should. I mean, we got enough gambling issues in sports now as it is. And if you say it's okay for college athletes to gamble on pro sports, I mean, that's just, I don't see, I don't even understand why they're considering that. It shouldn't be okay. Well, they can't gamble on college sports, but once you get started gambling on a regular basis, you know what I mean? It just leads to more. So, all right, that's just checking what's going on. Let's go ahead and take a phone call. We've got Mary in the ATL, and then Corey and Trust, will you hold tight? We'll get to you on the other side of the break. Mary in Atlanta is going to lead us off this morning. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing well.
Good. Do you feel like this bye week has definitely come at a pretty good time? You know, I feel like the team's exhausted. You know, you've had, about three or four home victories, pretty decent victories. And I feel like this bye week has definitely come at a pretty decent time. Can you agree?
Oh, absolutely, I do. I would not have wanted to play another game this weekend. I don't know how they'd have anything left. I think the schedule, while difficult, set up well. They played the first three games, and then they had a bye before they started that five-game stretch of SEC games. So they played three, got a break, got set for that five-game stretch, went through that five-game stretch, won them all, four against ranked teams, three on the road. And now you get the bye week, which is badly needed, and you are ready for your four-game stretch to close out the regular season. Three home games, and then the Iron Bowl at Auburn. And then hopefully a spot in Atlanta for the SEC championship, and then you get ready for the college football playoffs. So I think the schedule, while difficult, where the byes landed have been perfect. Now, if you lose to South Carolina, you don't feel as positive about that stretch. But they didn't lose. They found a way to win the game. So, yeah, I think this bye this week is at a perfect time. Now, if they had to play a game Saturday, they would play it. And teams have played six games in a row. There was a time when played 11-game schedules that you didn't get a bye until late in the year. I remember Alabama used to always try to take a bye back in the day before the Iron Bowl, so they'd play 10 straight games before they'd have a bye. But in this situation, I love the bye this week.
I noticed a little bit Saturday. Yeah, the game got off to a pretty ugly start, and up until the last 2 minutes of the fourth quarter, it was ugly. It wasn't a great start. But like I told somebody yesterday, you can have an ugly start. I mean, you don't have to start great, but as long as you finish well, I think that's the kicker, and, you know, that's what matters. And, yeah, we didn't have a great start, but we finished great, you know, scoring 15 points in 2 minutes. That's remarkable. I honestly didn't think that we would have that great of a comeback, because I'm not going to lie, I thought we were going to lose. It felt like a trap game to me.
Well, most people did. I mean, again, when you're down, when you're down eight late in the game, you not only need a touchdown, you need a touchdown and a 2-point conversion just to get it tied. And even then you're at a disadvantage because South Carolina has the ball. And they're trying to get in position to kick a field goal to beat you. So at that point, you're just thinking probably, more than anything, just get it into overtime. But instead, Alabama forces the fumble. Deontay Lawson rips the ball out from Lenora Sellers. Tim Keenan falls on it. And then you're already pretty much in field goal range. And then you start putting yourself in a position where South Carolina felt like if, another first down would not be good for them, so they kind of pull back, and Bernard scores the touchdown, and they don't have any timeouts left, and your defense comes out and gets the stop, and you win the game. So it went from looking like you were gonna lose to maybe get it into overtime to winning the game in regulation. So it was awesome.
That was great. Is there another game? Because I know we've got four games left. It's kind of crazy. It feels like football's just started. We're already over halfway done. Is there another game. Like, I'm not saying that, you know, it could be a loser type situation, because I don't want us to lose anymore. I feel like we're in a pretty good position. But is there another game that you see, you know, could maybe post some concern that maybe we could have one more loss this year before the season's over?
Well, I mean, I'm concerned about all three of those SEC games. I mean, I think you have to be. You know, with LSU and Oklahoma, they're good teams. But mostly, they're at home. But yeah, I think you have to be really concerned about going to Auburn. I mean, that's always it's a rivalry. It's an in-state rivalry. Even though Alabama's won the last two down there, they have been, you know, dramatic comebacks. And so I think that final game of the year, is going to be a tough game. I mean, there's no doubt about it. So I think I'm not just rubber stamping it and saying that all Alabama's going to go 4-0, down the stretch here, but I think that they can, and I think that they've got a good chance to do that. But yeah, I think when you go to the, you know, regardless of what Auburn's record is, and it could wind up being a lot better, and they could get on a roll now. They beat Arkansas. I think they'll beat Kentucky on Saturday night. But when you go down there, that final game of the season, it's going to be a tough one. I can promise you that, Mary. Hey, great phone call. I got to hit the break. Good to hear from you, okay?
Have a great day.
Thank you. All right, we'll take a timeout. We're going to come back and get to more phone calls. We've got Matt Coulter on NASCAR coming up at 9:30. The Gary Harris Show on Tide 100.9 FM and 1230 AM WTBC will continue right after this.
What's trending on the Tuscaloosa Thread.
Good Wednesday morning. Alabama U.S. Senator Katie Britt is backing a bill to fund Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, benefits during the federal government shutdown. Those benefits end Saturday if a deal is not reached. Meanwhile, Governor Ivey is rejecting state legislative Democrats' appeal for a special session of the legislature to cover the benefits if the program is halted. Click TuscaloosaThread.com for more West Alabama news, sports, and weather throughout the day. It's absolutely free. Don Hartley, Town Square Media, Tuscaloosa.
As much as Innisfree has evolved, it will always be that place to escape and have a good time. Whether it's for a game day weekend, to reminisce on college days, or to create new memories, if you're looking for a good time, there's only one thing to do. Head to the Free at 1925 University Boulevard. And don't forget about the Lucky Lunch Meet and Three.
At Decades, it's not just food, it's nostalgia served fresh. Decades Pub and Grub, where every bite is a blast from the past, downtown at Timberson Square.
You see him on WVUA 23 covering sports, and on Tider Insider TV on Tuesday nights. Don't miss a minute of the Gary Harris Show. Weekdays from 9 to 11 on Tide 100.9.
Welcome back into the Gary Harris Show. We got phone calls to get to Corey and Trustful, and then we'll get to Cam. Hey, Corey, good morning.
Hey, Gary, how you doing?
Doing well.
This morning.
Doing well.
Let me ask you this. Let's say, for example, Alabama wins the SEC championship. Yes, they will get the 4 seed, one of the 4 or 5s, but could you still see them penalizing Alabama as potentially the 4 seed because of the Florida State loss if Florida State keeps losing? Like, they're the lowest of the 4 seeds because of that Florida State loss.
If Alabama were to run the table and win the SEC championship and be 12-1, there's no way I think they'd be the 4 seed. I mean, I think they'd be possibly by then you could be the 1 seed, depending on what happens to, you know, Ohio State, Indiana, you know, those teams. If you win the SEC championship and you're 12-1, I mean, I don't think you'd be the 4 seed. I think you'd be higher than that.
So you think the committee would forgive that loss?
Well, I don't really forgive the loss. I think that you'd have to have some, you know, if that's a lot of football left. That's 5 games. If you win those 5 games and you're 12-1, and you play in the SEC, and you're the SEC champion, you're not going to be the 4 seed. I mean, you're going to be higher than that. The only, you know, because the Big Ten champion is going to possibly be undefeated, either Indiana or Ohio State, but there's no guarantee of that. But one of those teams is going to have a loss. They're ahead of you. And if you beat A&M in the championship game, you're going to beat them. The lowest you would be the two seed. That would be the lowest that you would be. If that scenario plays out, you might even be the one seed, but you'd be the two seed at the worst.
You said you're leaning toward Auburn against Kentucky.
I'm not leaning toward Auburn. I'm gonna pick Auburn. I think Auburn will beat Kentucky. They're at home.
Yeah, because they're at home, and Kentucky's just Auburn's kind of a little bit better than Kentucky.
I think so. I mean, I just think Auburn was able to win at Arkansas. They're. I just think they're better than Kentucky. I think they're substantially better than Kentucky, and they're playing them at Jordan-Hare Stadium. So yeah, I'm picking Auburn to win that game.
What about Tennessee and Oklahoma?
Yeah, tough one. Probably Tennessee. I'll probably go with Tennessee there.
I don't like those black uniforms they're wearing.
Well, you know, I'm not a fan of swapping uniforms either, but it gives them a chance to, you know, sell more merchandise. You know, you do the alternate uniforms, and it's a marketing ploy more than anything, I think.
I could see Florida hanging around against Georgia because, let's face it, Georgia's defense is not what it's been the past few years, and it's kind of like when you remove the interim coach, it's kind of like healing a wound in a way. Now, is it going to solve all the problems? No. But I feel like the Florida team could come out with good energy and maybe hang around. Now, I think Georgia will win the game, but I think it'll be closer than what people think. A lot of people think that Georgia's just going to walk over Florida because they have an interim coach, but I don't think this Florida team is going to lay down and die because it's a rivalry game, and Georgia's won, I think, the last four or five, and I think Florida's going to have something to say in this game and might hang around for a bit.
Yeah, I could see that for sure. I mean, I could see Florida, you know, with the bye week and, you know, coaching change and having a few wrinkles, and I could see them definitely hanging around in this game. I mean, I don't really think it'll be a blowout, but I think Georgia ultimately will win. But I think it'll be a competitive game.
Did you look at the college football rankings? The preview of it last night.
No, I mean, you're talking about they put out a preview of what the CFP rankings will look like next week for the first week?
Well, it was based off the AP poll.
No, I haven't really. I mean, I've looked at the AP poll, but I haven't really looked at the pre-college football rankings because they'll come out next Tuesday night, and that's what I'll look at them. But what if it's just based on the – is it just based strictly on the AP poll?
Yeah, they did a ranking based off the AP poll, but what they were saying was there's a really good chance that five SEC teams could get in, two ACC teams, the Big 12 winner, three Big 10 teams, and then a group of five winner. And the only way Notre Dame would get in is they have to go 10-2 and they need help as well, but there is a path for Notre Dame. But the big takeaway is five SEC teams and three Big Ten teams. So eight of the 12 slots belong to the Big Ten and the SEC.
Okay, yeah. That's like I said, next Tuesday night we'll get the first edition of the rankings and we'll be able to see it up close and personal and go from there every week. So it'll be fun. Hey, thank you, Corey.
Good talk to you, Gary. Roll Tide.
All right, appreciate you. All right, let's get to Cam here. Hey, Cam.
What's up, homie? How you living, dude?
Doing well, man.
It's a beautiful day up here in North Georgia. It's about to get another shower. The deer are running. It's college football. It's gorgeous. But, hey, what do you think Kiffin's going to do? If you're a fly on a wall, what would you think he would do right now since he seems to be all eyes on him?
I have no idea. I mean, I think right now he's trying to focus on coaching his team because they got a chance to have a special season. So you have to be able to block all this other stuff out. I mean,
at a point, you got enough money, right? It's not about money anymore. They all got plenty of money. It would be, do you want to stay where you're at, or do you want to go to Florida? Do you want to go to Penn State? Do you want to go to LSU? It's just fascinating to think about. Anyway, hey, man, the main reason I called, is I'm fascinated by certain aspects of football. I never played. I was a soccer guy. You know, my North Georgia education. But why don't we, at the coin toss, I want the ball every single time. I don't want to defer. If we're playing at home, they got the lights flashing at night, and they're telling the trilogy. I mean, I'm running through walls at the house. Well, I want the ball every time. And the dude from the Gamecock said, I want the ball. Was his name Beamer? What are your thoughts on the coin toss?
Most people defer now because the thought process is you want to get extra possessions. And most people defer with the thought process that we're going to get a stop, and then we're going to have the ball coming out of the second half, and maybe we can get the ball going into the half, and they feel like they can set themselves up for an extra possession. If you defer and you get a stop. then that's perfect strategy. Now, if you defer and the other team takes it down and scores, which we've seen some this year, then I don't know. Most people defer in this day and age. Back in the old days, they always took the ball. When you won the toss, you took the ball.
It all kind of shifted one day. I woke up and I'm like, I want the ball. It's my house. It's my QB. I want the ball. We got the energy now. I've got to sit on my hands. So I guess the extra possession doesn't make sense. All right, man, let me go play in the rain before it comes down on me. Good talk
all
to
right,
you, Gary.
Kim, appreciate you, man. Good to hear from you. 9:28 here on the Gary Harris Show, and we are going to take a timeout. And when we come back, we're going to be joined by Matt Coulter on NASCAR as we have the Final Four, the championship race coming up at Phoenix. A lot to discuss with Matt, and we'll do that next here on the Gary Harris Show.
Home of Alabama sports. We are a championship school, and school is in session.
And the clock's gonna run out, and Bama's gonna win it 29-22. And for the love, let's get out of here.
Join us next Saturday as the Crimson Tide take on the LSU Tigers at Bryant-Denny Stadium on your home for Alabama football.
Presented by Pearl River Resort in Choctaw, Mississippi. Online at pearlriverresort.com. And Tuscaloosa Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram.
On great green specials, making it a great spot to catch the game or enjoy a night out with friends. Grandstand, located on 4th Street and Demerson Square, downtown.
Since 2011, Billy Sports Grill, located on Main Avenue in historic downtown Northport, has been serving their legendary signature chicken sandwich, award-winning wings, and handcrafted cocktails. Billy's is also the spot to watch all your favorite sporting events with big screen, high definition televisions, both dining rooms, at the bar.
Moments from the game. The Tide Post Game Show is powered by Pearl River Resort, DCH Regional Medical Center, Tuscaloosa Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram, and Two Dimes.
Roll Tide. The best sports talk, period. Your home for Alabama sports. Tide 100.9. And streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
Welcome back. It's time for Matt Coulter on NASCAR, and the Championship Four is set for Phoenix. Had a really good race at Martinsville for the Xfinity 500. William Byron got the victory. So it's all Hendrick Chevrolets and Gibbs Toyotas in the Final Four. We've got Byron and Larson from the Hendrick stable driving the Chevys, and we've got Hamlin and Briscoe from the Toyota stable driving the Toyotas, and no Fords as Penske is shut out, and I think all those other drivers are very happy there's no Penske Ford in the Final Four at Phoenix. But Matt, good morning, and here we are. We've gone all season to get to this Final Four. Before we look ahead, your thoughts on Martinsville?
Well, I thought it was a terrific race. You and I are both big fans of short tracks. It's just a little over a half a mile. It was a great race except for the fact that, you know, it was pretty much dominated by two cars. You know, it was Blaney and Byron. And it came down to a two-car shootout. And that, just face it, the Chevrolet had more. It was just the better car, and it was all day. They had 304 laps. But William Byron takes the flag, stamps his ticket, and then Larson gets in on points. And Alabama may not be playing football this weekend. That's okay. I think I want an open day. The team wants an open day. But, hey, Sunday, we've got Phoenix, and it is the Final Four race for the NASCAR Cup Series Championship.
Yeah, you mentioned Blaney, and he started 31st in an unbelievable job, and he and Logano both knew they had to win to advance, and both looked really strong there for a while, but I think you said it. I think that William Byron's car just made it impossible to keep him from getting past Blaney there, and once he got out front, again, he was going to get to the checker bar, and something unforeseen. So we've talked about this before. Penske's won the last three. You only have three manufacturers, but ideally, I think NASCAR would like to have each manufacturer represented in the Final Four, yeah. But that didn't happen this year. So, and also, you've got two power teams. So I think that's another question about, again, if you're not with one of these power teams, you know, you got a chance, but, more times than not, the NASCAR champion is going to come from one of these power teams, and that'll be the case again this year.
Yeah, that's true, and I don't see that changing in the near future, do you?
No, I don't.
It's going to, you've got some teams that win races like Spire and Front Row, and then you've got 2311, and they're strong with Bubba Wallace and Tyler Reddick, and of course Hamlin's in it. An adjacent part of that team. But the bigger the team, the better the research and development. And hey, I don't know. I can drop a hat over right there. That's the reason. It'll continue this way. And I know I'm not the only one that's disappointed. You just mentioned it. No Fords. And you also touched on something at the top of the segment, Gary. They, Chevrolet and Toyota did not want a Ford.
No, not at that track.
Not at Phoenix. Not at Phoenix. Kevin Harvick, 9 wins there in Ford.
All right, let's kind of handicap what's coming up on Sunday, and we'll begin with the track report.
Okay, it is a 1 mile track. It's called a dog leg oval, which if you can picture that in your mind, like on a golf course, it's kind of crooked on one end, but not much. Built in 63, it's asphalt. It's oddly configured as far as the banking's concerned, because the straightaways are, well, they're 9 degrees in the front, 3 degrees in the back, 9 degrees in 1 and 2, and then 11 degrees in 3 and 4. So, basically, it's a very, very flat track, and that's why some drivers just dominate, like a Kevin Harvick or a Joey Logano's got 4, Jimmy Johnson's got 4. Once you figure that track out, don't you think that you're going to win a lot of races? I remember when we first started doing this show, Gary, picking Kevin Harvick at Phoenix was like picking SVG on a road course.
Mm-hmm.
Remember how he just dominated there? Won't be a Ford this year.
No, it won't be. So let's get to our prediction, because there's a couple other topics. I've had a couple of listeners that wanted me to ask you questions, but let's get to our picks for Phoenix. Will we have a first time champion? Will we have a repeat champion? We have a possibility for both. You have the first pick this week. So who do you like?
I do.
And I think it doesn't have to happen. There's going to be 30-something other cars in the field, but I think that we feel like probably the winner will be one of these in the championship four. Yeah. So who's your pick for Sunday?
Oh, golly. I'd forgotten, and we talked Sunday night, I'd forgotten I had first pick, because I was all prepared for you to take Denny Hamlin. And then I was all he threw me a curveball. Actually, nobody threw me a curveball. I just didn't pay attention. I'm going to take the least favorite. Just out of the blue, I like the guy. I like his team. So Simon Talladega. I'm going to take Chase Briscoe. How about that?
Yeah. Boy, sure finished the season strong. And
I had three wins. He had a really good season. So.
Well, I'm gonna throw you a curveball too, because I've been saying all year I thought it was Denny Hamlin's time, and well, maybe I won't throw a curveball. I really think Byron's gonna be strong. I just the momentum that he gained, and obviously you can't count out Larson. He's won a championship, but yeah, let me stay with Denny. I mean, if he doesn't get it done this year. Then it's not going to happen, I don't think. I don't know
if it will or not.
I think it's now or never. I mean, I think this is his opportunity, and I think everything he's done, even once he knew he was going to be in the Final Four, has been to peak for this race because of his age, because of where he's at in his career. I think he'll do whatever it takes to cross that checkered first, and unless there's a mechanical failure. Yeah, I think that the drive and the determination, but, you know, now you've taken Briscoe and I've taken Hamlin. I guarantee it'll be one of the Chevrolets now.
Yeah, you're probably right. But the chalk out of Vegas has got Hamlin, Larson as the favorites, and then William Byron, and then Chase Briscoe. But they're all very, very close. I mean, you got four guys there. I mean, the odds are going to be pretty good with all of them. But
well, it's been.
Do you think there's a chance somebody other than those four wins? Wouldn't that throw it in a wrench?
Very slim. I would say less than 10%. But yeah, there's a chance. Like we said, you got the Penske Forge running out there. Sure. I mean, there's a chance that some, you know, particularly one of those guys, Cindric.
If they don't get wrecked by Carson Hocevar.
Yeah, boy, man, he is. He's going to, I know he's talented, but he's not made any friends, man. He's going to have to.
He's overdriving his car.
Yeah, he's going to have to tone it down a little bit, because otherwise he's gotten a bad reputation, and he's not winning. So that makes it even worse. But. Yeah, I think there's a job. I say less than 10. It's probably, I'd say probably better than that. I'd say probably there's a 1 out of 5 chance, about 20%, that somebody outside the championship four could win that race.
Yeah, it'll probably be Blaney, just because he didn't finish the way he wanted to, and he's driving a Ford. It's Phoenix, maybe. I'm still going to stick with Briscoe.
Well, I'm stick with Hamlin, so there you go. What do you think of the season? How did, you know, it seemed a lot of parity. A lot of different guys won races. Do you think it was a good year?
Yeah, I wouldn't call it the greatest year. I think we saw some things perhaps not too much in the past. I think when, like early in the season, you remember Christopher Bell won 3 in a row?
I do.
That really just doesn't happen much anymore in the Cup Series. So. That was kind of cool. Of course, I love the Talladega races. I love the Briscoe win here just within the last couple of weeks. So, yeah, I think it's been a good year, but not a great one. Would you agree?
Yeah, exactly what I would say. Good, but not great. And we didn't have that. You know, we had some talking, little finger pointing, but we didn't have a pure, you know, blown driver feud. We never got any fisticuffs in the garage, either between drivers or team members. I had some weather issues. I would have liked to have had more Saturday night racing. So, it was, yeah, good season, but not spectacular.
Well, we may change our mind in a week. I don't really think so. I don't think one race can make a season, but, who knows? Who knows what'll happen in Phoenix? And then we'll have the silly season. And everybody will start swapping around. Of course, some of those deals have already been made, but we'll go over that after the season's over. But there'll be some new faces and some new rides. But for the most part, Gary, the way I view it, it's going to stay. The hands are pat as far as who's racing for whom, especially with the big dogs.
I agree 100%. All right, Matt, I've got a couple of topics for you that Ragged Glory wants to know, he says that he's got a question for Matt Coulter. It's been reported that Ray Evernham is resurrecting NASCAR's IROC series. Do you know anything about this?
I read the same thing he did, and I saw the headline. I think it popped up a couple weeks ago, actually. We should have talked about it before. Thank you, Ragged Glory. But I'm all for it. You know, when I first got into NASCAR and was covering it, the IROC races, I think back then they were racing Camaros. But for those that don't know, you take an outlaw driver, a Sprint Cup driver, you take an F1 driver, and, you know, take NASCAR drivers. I think they'll take them from both Cup and Xfinity. But they pull them in identically prepared cars, and they are all under the same tent, you know. They are identical. They're as identical as it could possibly get. And you race on different tracks. I remember the ones in Daytona were just fabulous. But then they go to a short track, and they would race not a full schedule by, you know, NASCAR standards, but I guess they'd have 6 or 8 a year. And it was really cool to see Al Unser racing against Dale Earnhardt Sr. It was cool. I'm all for it, and I hope Ray gets it going.
Yeah, and for those that are wondering that don't remember it, IROC stands for International Race of Champions, and it brought in different drivers, or drivers from different genres of racing, and all in identically prepared automobiles. And you're right, it was fun. And if I remember correctly, Matt, more times than not, it was a NASCAR driver that won.
Yes, it was, but also the majority of the races were on NASCAR tracks. Quick story, remember Bobby Rahal, Indy 500 winner?
Very well,
he was in the IROC race. He was in the IROC race at Daytona, and he got turned sideways and flipped up on his roof, and he just scooted on his roof all the way through the grass in the tri-oval area. And then afterwards, he said, yeah, and I was pumping the brakes the whole time. I just thought that was funny. You know,
yeah.
He's on his hood, you know.
And the other question from Robbie Glenn, do you think NASCAR would ever consider doing a Ryder Cup of NASCAR, teaming up hated rivals on the same team, just one race to try to win, beat whomever would be the foreign team, or Ford versus Chevy or versus Toyota, or some type of team competition for one race? Has that ever been discussed, Matt?
Not to my knowledge. I mean, it's kind of, they kind of do that, but not in a Ryder Cup fashion. But, you know, you got the Gibbs teams and Penske teams and stuff like that. But I don't know. Leave it to Robbie Glenn to come up with one. Really, really stumped me. I've never thought of that. Give me a week, and I might have something insightful to say about it. But the first thing I thought about was, well, what if you have, like, let's say 4-car team, something like that?
Mm-hmm.
What if they end up blocking everybody else, you know, getting in everybody's way, and they're all four trying to block for one guy? And I don't know, Robbie, that's a very interesting subject, and one that I'm not prepared to answer, to be honest with you, Gary.
It is kind of a neat thought. And lastly, Matt, and this is for me, we've kind of broken down the season. Next week, of course, we'll know who the champion is. There's always discussion this time of year about the system, the point system, the Final Four. Do you expect that the playoff format that we have this year and have had for the last few years will continue in 2026?
You know, I really don't. It may take until 2027. You know, NASCAR runs through this with a fine-tooth comb. But I just read way too many people that are not in favor of it, some drivers, some owners. A lot of fans don't like it. NASCAR has always tried to cater to their fans. And I think there's a good chance they're going to change it. Maybe not for the upcoming season, but then after that. I say that as, you know, if you're going to change it, let's do it now. Let's set it up in December. That way everybody knows going into Daytona that this is the way the point system's going to be. I don't really know how they're going to tweak it, but I think they will. Do you feel that positive about it?
I'm on the fence. I mean, because I see a lot of discussion about it. See a lot of people that are unhappy with it. I don't mind it. I like the fact that, you know, you start with 16 and you go through a cut down process until you get to a Final Four. And, you know, like we've said before, it still doesn't mean you can't try to win the race if you're not in, you know, the championship hunt. I don't know what else you could do. I mean, there's a lot of people say there's not enough interest in winning. I even saw one person just said, hey, you know, let's just keep up with points all year, and then the final race, make everybody eligible. The points leader starts one. The last in points starts 38th or 40th or 42nd, how many cars you have, and you make everybody eligible. And the winner takes the championship. But you get, you know, you get to start on the pole. But that seems like a lot of racing to come down to one race, and you could have a guy starting at the back of the pack, and there could be a huge wreck, and he hadn't won a race all year, and he winds up winning the championship. But that's kind of, you know, a little bit what you know, golf does. You know, once you get to the tour championship, you know, you've got a chance, whether you're first or you're, you know, 32nd or whatever. So I don't know. I don't know. I get a feeling if they tweak it, it's going to be very mild. I think they like the narrowing it down. You race all the races, you start the playoffs, and you get it down to four. I guess the only other thing I could see, Matt, would maybe be get it down to eight and let eight guys have a shot at the end. That might be something you could do. Open it up to more cars.
Yeah. And, you know, they used to just do it on cumulative points throughout the entire season. Yeah. That was pretty crazy, too. Let me ask you this. If they're going to change anything, they're going to do that. Final question, and I'll get out of your hair. Will you keep the stages?
Well, that is a great question. I like the stages, don't you, Matt?
I like racing
for something other than just the win. I like knowing that, you know, you can accumulate points and you can win something even if you're not around at the end. You know, you can get a stage win at the first stage, and then if you get knocked out, you still got something for that race. So yeah. I like the stages. So I'd like to see them kept in regardless of how they tweak it.
Some guys won't lead a stage and they'll win the race. Some guys will lead two stages and finish 13th, you know. I didn't think I was going to like it, to be honest with you, Gary. I kind of had my guard up. But I like it.
I like it, too.
Keep it moving forward,
too. Yeah, and because, really, again, it's within the race. Let's say, you know, that second stage, you know, those guys are racing for something. They're racing for something.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they're not then, you know, it keeps more drivers from just kind of cruising around, even at the big tracks, at the back of the pack, waiting for that final run. You know, it gives you incentive to get up there and compete early on in the race to try to win something to get some points.
Yeah, that's a great point, and that's why I would keep it. And maybe they'll call and ask us how they're going to do this over. But right now, it's all pretty good. I mean, I'm okay if they keep it the way it is.
Yeah, I don't have a problem. I don't have a problem with it.
I really don't.
I like what Logano said. You know, they interviewed him after the race, and I think a lot of people, because they don't like him, were thinking he'd whine or whatever. He just said, we don't deserve to be in the Final Four. We weren't good enough. So give him credit for that. He didn't make any excuses. He just said, you know, we don't deserve to be there. So good for him.
Well, that's kind of unlike him, but it is good for him. And he recognizes that, you know, those other four guys, you know, they deserve to be there. And we'll see what happens in Phoenix.
Yep.
Hey, I'm over on my time, man. Roll Tide.
Thanks, Matt.
We'll talk soon.
I appreciate it. 9:52 here on the Gary Harris Show. Game Day Men's Health, located at 1013th Street East in Tuscaloosa, offers convenient, expert-backed care for all men looking to feel and perform their best. Your personalized treatment starts with their signature three-step plan. Step one, complete intake and simple blood work. You'll get results in 15 minutes. Step two, meet with a clinic director who specializes in hormone therapy and men's health. And then step three, begin your customized treatment plan. All consultations are free. Fatigue, stress, poor sleep, low libido, and weight gain aren't just everyday annoyances. They can be signs your body needs support. At Game Day Tuscaloosa, they get to the root of these symptoms and deliver treatment plans tailored to your goals. What you can expect from Game Day tailored men's health plans include boosted energy levels, improved motivation and mood, deeper, more restful sleep, reduced belly fat, stronger workouts, and faster muscle recovery, natural hair growth, regrowth support. That's something that we all need as a man to consider. Get to game day. 1013th Street East in Tuscaloosa and get started on the track to better health. All right, we'll come back and wrap up the first hour of the Gary Harris Show. Get you ready for Larry the Music Man. This is the Gary Harris Show on Tide 100.9 FM and 1230 AM WTBC.
Coming up on The Game with Ryan Fowler.
Coming up on the Wednesday edition of The Game, we're going to have a chance to talk with Chris Plank. We're going to explore the Alabama Crimson Tide defense. What grade would you give them going into this bye week? We'll review the first 8 weeks and look ahead to the final 4 weeks, all starting at 2 p.m. here on The Game with Ryan Fowler on Tide 100.9, 1230 WTBC, your home of Alabama Crimson Tide sports.
The longest running sports program in Tuscaloosa. The Game with Ryan Fowler. Weekdays from 2 to 6 p.m. on Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
If you haven't already, you've got to try Tuscaloosa's unique breakfast, brunch, and lunch concept. Brick and Spoon, downtown Tuscaloosa, Timberson Square. It's fresh food with a Cajun flair featuring a full bar with build-your-own Bloody Marys and mimosas. Open daily, 7 a.m. until 2 p.m. Available for after...
radio and digital marketing plans to help grow your business. Hit me up at wyatt.fulton@townsquaremedia.com and I can tell you more and let's help your business score big.
Life doesn't wait for when your finances are in perfect order. It just happens. But no matter what surprises come your way, Alabama Credit Union will be here to help make it affordable with great personal loans, mortgages, and auto loans. They offer an easy application process and fast decisions so you can stay focused on feeling good about whatever life brings your way. Alabama Credit Union will be here to help make it affordable with great personal loans, mortgages.
Affordable treatment options at up to 95% less than brand names at HIMS.com/joy. That's HIMS.com/joy, HIMS.com/JOY.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
Cloudy and cool with occasional rain today, the high 56. For tonight, the sky mostly cloudy, the low 45. Tomorrow, clearing with sunshine by afternoon, the high 57. Friday, a sunny day with a high at 63. I'm James Spann with the Alabama Weather Network on Tide 100.9. It's 54 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
You're listening to The Gary Harris Show. Streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
That's going to wrap it up for hour number one. It's been brought to you by Alabama Credit Union. Hey, real quickly, let me mention to you the YMCA of Tuscaloosa is ready for you, and you're ready for the Y. 2313 Street downtown, a full-service fitness facility. Everything that you need, including a great staff led by CEO Jeff Knox, a terrific wellness area, two lighted outdoor pickleball courts, fitness classrooms, daycare, silver sneakers program for seniors. It's all right there at the Y. If you've never been by the Y, swing by and let them show you around and become a member. I've been a member for 20 years, and I wouldn't consider working out anywhere else. The YMCA of Tuscaloosa, the Y is ready for you when you're ready for the Y. Hour number two is coming up. We're going to get it started with Larry the Music Man talking about Dwayne Allman, and we'll do that on the other side. Keep it dialed in to Tide 100.9 FM and 1230 AM WTBC.
From the Fox Sports Studios in Los Angeles,
Here's Steve DeSager.
The Toronto Blue Jays beat the Dodgers in L.A. 6-2 with four runs in the seventh in the span of 11 pitches after the Dodger bullpen entered the World Series even at two games apiece. Winning pitcher Shane Bieber over Shohei Ohtani went six-plus innings with six strikeouts, but Vladimir Guerrero hit an early two-run homer. Coming up Game 5 in L.A. Wednesday, it'll be Blake Snell against Toronto rookie Trey Yesavage. The New Orleans Saints will start rookie quarterback Tyler Shuck at the Rams on Sunday. Spencer Rattler was benched. Quarterback Jaden Daniels of Washington is due to return to practice Wednesday after his hamstring injury. In the NBA, Oklahoma City's 5-0 after edging Sacramento 107-101, 31 points for Shai Gilgeous-Alexander.
Free information, call 800-319-3687, 800-319-3687. 800-319-3687.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
Cloudy and cool with occasional rain today, the high 56. For tonight, the sky mostly cloudy, the low 45. Tomorrow, clearing with sunshine by afternoon, the high 57. Friday, a sunny day with a high at 63. I'm James Spann with the Alabama Weather Network on Tide 100.9. It's 54 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
The Gary Harris Show. UCM host Tider Insider TV. Crimson Tide kickoff. Play-by-play for Alabama sports and sports director for WVUA 23. It's time for the Gary Harris Show on your home for Alabama sports. Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
All right, here we go. Hour number two of the Gary Harris Show here on Tide 100.9 FM at 1230 AM. WTBC Gary Harris and Chase Brumfield. And as I said earlier in the show, I got a little dental work I got to do this morning at 11, so I'm going to be getting out a little bit early, and that means we're moving up Larry the Music Man segment from 10:30 to 10. Of Statesboro Blues, as we're going to be talking about the late great Greg Allman and mainly Dwayne Allman, his late great Dwayne Allman, but both passed on. But Dwayne, of course, passed tragically in his early 20s from a motorcycle accident. Larry the Music Man is with us this morning. Good morning, Larry.
Gary, good morning. You hate for something to fall on my segment, but it was 54 years ago today we lost Dwayne Allman.
Wow. Time flies.
But, you know, it's a tribute to him, so you couldn't ask for falling on my show. But anyway, this will finish up our Southern Rock for the month of November. It's going to be Larry the Music Man for the next 2 months. We're going to get back to basics. We're going to finish up the 70s for November, and we're going into the 60s for December. It'll be a great Christmas time at Christmas to do that, because we're going to take our time with it like we have the 70s. But, you know, we talked in our early segment way back. Gary, I can't even remember when we started this. Can you? When did we start?
Well, I mean, it started obviously with you just being a caller on the show, and you know, you'd heard me talking about Chuck Lavelle and other music acts, and you know, you had called in about football, and then we started talking about music, and you know, it just kind of evolved. Yeah, I'm kind of backtracking. Yeah. I'm trying my mind to get there. It evolved into you know, us having regular conversations, and then just saying, hey, let's just do a music segment. It's been. I wish I'd have made a note on the day. It's been over a year. I know that.
Man, blink of an eye. Hey, it started in Muscle Shoals, and this is where Dwayne, after the Hourglass in California, he came home. They broke up, and he bought an old milk truck and went home to Daytona for a while and played around here and there. So he decided he heard about Muscle Shoals. He'd heard what was going on there in 68. So he buys this old milk truck, and he motors over to Alabama and sleeps in the car, parking lot, camps out. You know, Rick Hall said, man, what is going on? Who is this guy? You know, this long-haired hippie dude. And he stayed on Rick to give him a shot to let him play, you know. So Rick let him play, and my God, he says, well, I'm going to hire you as a session man. So that's pretty much where this got started. And the whole Southern rock thing evolved from him and Wilson Pickett getting together on a lunch break and Dwayne telling Wilson Pickett, I want you to do Hey Jude. I've got this version in my head. And Wilson Pickett said, you're a crazy white boy. The Beatles have Hey Jude. I can't top that. He said, no, man, just listen to this. So when Jimmy Johnson came back and all the Swampers, eventually we'll be called the Swampers, they came in and heard that. And Jimmy said, damn, roll the tape. And immediately Rick Hall signed Dwayne to Muscle Shoals as a session guitar player. And his work is so broad. There's two anthology albums available. You can buy vinyl or CD. There's anthology one and two, and they are double albums, each one. And I'm not going into all the artists, but that tells you how much work he did at Muscle Shoals. So Rick Hall called Jerry Wexler at Atlanta Records, Jerry Wexler and Tom Dowd, and he said, you got to hear this. He said, I've never heard anything like that. This guy playing guitar like that on the end of a song, a soul version of Hey Jude. So Eric Clapton calls Jerry Wexler and said, who is this guy? Who is that on that? He says, it's a long-haired hippie, long-haired boy from Daytona Beach, Florida. He said, man, I've never, he said, anyway, it all went in circles, and Phil Walden, Rick Hall called Phil Walden and said, you got to hear this. The guy over here I've got in the studio is old long-haired hippie boy. He said that blank, blank can play a guitar.
Yeah.
So they bought Phil and Jerry Wexler bought the contract for $15,000 from Rick Hall. That's what helped finance. Jerry Wexler helped Phil Walden. He helped him finance Capricorn Records, and the rest is history. Dwayne goes to Capricorn. He brings this band that he's already jamming with, those cats, Dickie Betts, Barry Oakley, Butch Trucks, J-Mo Johnson. Greg wasn't in the fold yet. But anyway, it all happened right there in Muscle Shoals, and then it evolved over to Capricorn Records, where it's been said over and over, and some people may argue and some may not. If it wasn't for Dwayne Allman started Southern Rock. He was the innovator. He had the vision. And the last thing Rick Hall told him, he said, you're going to leave me. I'm selling your contract. And he said, yeah, I'm shooting for the stars. And Rick Hall said, well, you're a damn fool. And he later said, I missed that one. You know, Rick never warmed up to the slide for some reason.
Really?
And Dwayne played a Corseden bottle. You know, back then, as probably now, back then it was in a glass bottle in the 70s.
That's right.
Cold medicine.
That's right.
Dwayne had gotten sick. Yeah. Dwayne was practicing on the Taj Mahal song. It ain't even nothing like the Statesboro Blues that they did. You know, Dwayne took blues songs and innovated them and took them to another level because a blues song is most of the basic blues was very basic meat potatoes, and it was quite boring after a while. Dwayne took it to the next level and put it on the radio and put it on vinyl and sold millions of records. So his vision influenced other artists like Muscle Shoals. I mean, Marshall Tucker Band, Wet Willie, Charlie Daniels, on and on. I mean, and that's pretty much where it got started. And I want people to know just how important Muscle Shoals was, as we discussed earlier in our segments. You know, it was the birth of a lot of music.
Oh,
probably, yeah. Of course,
Absolutely.
You guys, yeah, tell me. You talked to me. We talked about this.
Yeah, I mean, it's and what's been so good about it is because of the history of Muscle Shoals and what it meant, it has become there's been so many documentaries done. There's been so many, you know, news crews and film crews and musicians that have gone up there to make sure that we don't forget. And that, you know, if you're a Southern rock fan now, you mentioned Capricorn Records, you talk about Macon, you talk about Atlanta, but you talk about Muscle Shoals and what it has meant to music. And it'll, you know, it's forever, you know, saved now because of all these documentaries and all these specials that have been done on it. So you're right. It's great. Hey, Larry, if people want to call in and join the program, 205-342-9904, 205-342-9904 is the number. Did Ragged Glory want to go ahead and get on, or did he want to wait? All right, let's go ahead and punch Ragged Glory through so he can visit with you. Hey, Ragged Glory.
Hey, good morning, guys. Hey,
man,
hey.
What's going on?
My. hey. My. This segment will never die. There's more to the picture than meets the eye. Hey,
there you go.
Alabama, if you don't know, I want to give kudos to this man. He has just been inducted to the Georgia Music Hall of Fame. Your life contribution to music, Larry, is unreal. Your everything, every experience, everybody you know, oh my goodness gracious, you did deserve this, brother. You know,
well, brother,
I'm sorry. I'm telling you, this is a lifetime achievement, and I bow before you.
I appreciate that, man, brother.
Yeah, that's. I'm glad you called in with that. I can't. This is. I can never, Larry. I know you got fans. I can never ever get to make the announcement on the Country Music Hall of Fame in Georgia. Everybody beats me to it every time. But now, Ragged Glory, I don't mind you bringing that up at all. I was going to save it for the end of the segment, but no, it's we were not going to let this go by without mentioning that. And it happened over the weekend.
Cool.
Since Ragged Glory's brought it up, Larry, what was that experience like?
Well, Gary, yeah. there was 38 inductees, and it was all done in 4 hours.
Oh, wow.
I was next to last. There was three drummers. There were a lot of it, some Atlanta people I met years ago. There was a lot of bluegrass people. This was a wide open segment. It wasn't just vocalists. It was instrumentalists, different genres of music. Some really cool cats, man, from the Atlanta area that I hadn't seen in years. And, you know, the weight, because each person inducted, their resume is pretty much announced. And the director told me, says, my God, I can't do all this. She said, I had to cut it down anyway. She said, it was funny. She got tickled when she was doing my announcement to bring me up, you know, my past, what I'd done and all my accolades and stuff. She said, Shaking Britches, man, what a name. Everybody, you know, everybody enjoyed that being, you know, she brought up Mickey and all that.
Mm-hmm.
She said, Shaking Britches. Now that is unique. That is original. Then the other band was Contraband. She said, oh my God. She said, this is getting crazy anyway. That was one of the groups I played with.
Oh, that's awesome.
But it was good, Gary, and I was ready. I mean, you know, at 58 years, I said, in a blink of an eye, I was gone. That's what I try to, everybody laughs when these young kids laugh when you say, one day you will be old. In blink of an eye.
Oh,
and
it then, is.
You
know, it is. But
they don't want to hear it. I didn't want to hear it either.
But But what a way to be honored and to have that life in music, to be in a Hall of Fame is something special. Hey, thank you, Raggy Laurie, for pointing that out, man.
Thank you, buddy. You know, Gary Lane did a nice thing on her page. If anybody wants to go to her music page, she did a nice tribute to me. That meant a lot to me. I've supported her and think a lot of her talent and her hard work.
Oh, yeah.
She kind of gave me a shout out. So,
well, let's get some more phone calls and let's see. Let's see who was first up. Bryce, punch Bryce through. Hey, Bryce.
Hey, Larry. The best of your knowledge, did Travis and Dwayne Allman's path ever cross?
Travis did a little more in the later years, but yeah, he was in the fold there. Dwayne.
I just wondered if him and. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I don't know of any work they did together. And I'm not going to say they did or didn't. I've learned to do that. In music, I'd rather just say I don't know because I'm not sure about that. But that's one guy right there has worked his body of work. You know, Womack was something else, man. He was part of the movement. Bryce, I want to tell you what Dwayne. They were fixing to play Carnegie Hall, and I knew Red Dog very well, the drum tech. And he told me a story with Willie Perkins. That was the original road manager, William Perkins. He's at the Gabba Fest. He told me, he said, you know, just right before Red Dog died, he said, Dwayne came to me the night before and said, no more beans. We're on our way. This is a religion we're spreading. He got killed the next day. Dwayne never got the money nor the fame due to him living. He's bigger now than, say, Elvis, you know, he's bigger now than he was then. In fact, they're doing a thing today in Macon for him. They'll gather at his grave. And Gary, I sent you some pictures. Isn't that beautiful, Rose Hill?
Yeah, very, very, very nice.
Bryce, y'all need to go up there and visit Rose Hill Cemetery and see all this and go to Big House if you can. It's just as important as Muscle Shoals, the museum and everything, the studio there. It's really part of the 3M's, Memphis, Muscle Shoals, and Macon, you know. But Travis, yeah, man, I don't know the answer to that, Bryce. I don't know anybody I could talk to. Here's the problem. Everybody's dying.
Yeah.
Everybody's
unfortunately.
Dead.
Are there sick? Are they in up that way?
Okay. All right. Thank you, Bryce. Great.
He's not in good shape.
Great call. Yeah. We want to take care of. Hopefully, Travis will be with us for a while. Yeah, we got some more phone calls to get to, so I got to keep it on time. Let's take our break, and we'll come back with one more segment. We're going to get to Tom and Philip on the other side with Larry the Music Man, and he is celebrating Dwayne Allman, one of the greatest slide guitar players of all time, taken way too quickly. This date, 54 years ago in 1971. We'll be back after this.
Once again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/free. ZipRecruiter.com/free. Never miss out on great candidates with ZipRecruiter.
Where the season never ends. This is your home of Alabama sports. Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
All right, 10:23, a few more minutes with Larry the Music Man, remembering the late Dwayne Allman, and go ahead and punch Tom through, Chase. Tom, hey, good morning.
Morning, Gary. Morning, Larry. I really, really enjoy Wednesdays on Gary's show. It's a great show to begin with, but this is fantastic, and I appreciate it.
Well, thank you.
Well, sure. I've missed you, man.
Well, I've been right here now.
Philip said your work is, you're busy where you work a lot of times, but you listen, so.
I hear it every Wednesday. But, you know, one of the things about loving Southern rock, it kind of fit in with my growing up. And Allman Brothers were always at the top of the list for me. I loved Greg and I loved Wayne and all the guys with him. But, you know, Skinner, you know, after the segment on Skinner here for the last couple of weeks, Skinner, to me, you could hear the sound that Dwayne invented in Skinner. And they were kind of a continuation of the Allman Brothers, early Allman Brothers. Have I got that wrong, or do you agree with me?
No, you're dead on it. Gary Rosington, Freebird was written for Dwayne, and that was definitely Dwayne Allman talking with, when Gary Rosington played the slide part on Freebird. And that, they would tribute that song to Dwayne, the original band, right, when they would do it. And, Steve Gaines, the awesome guitar player with Skinner, you can hear Dwayne Allman all in his slide blend. No doubt about it, Tom. That's what I'm saying. Dwayne Allman, it was a movement. It was just as big as what Elvis Presley did for, you know, what he did, or the Beatles. Yeah.
I agree. And, you know, let me ask you this. Twin guitars. To me, Skinner owned that. I mean, a lot of people tried it, but they owned it. Am I right? Dwayne and all the brothers started it. But Skinner owned.
Dickie Betts and Dwayne Allman, they started that trend. And if anybody doubts that, listen to the Fillmore East Live, and you'll be taken to church, brother. I'm telling you, that is guitar, yeah, heaven. Skinner picked right up. Skinner picked up where the brothers left off.
Sure did. Hey, thank you, brother. I appreciate you.
Thank you, Tom. Appreciate that very much. All right, Philip is going to be our last caller with Larry. Hey, Philip.
Hey, y'all. Hey, Larry. Just wanted to say congratulations again for the Georgia Country Music Hall of Fame award. That's quite an honor. I just want to congratulate you again.
Well, thank you, Philip. It was a good way to end what I've done, and I'm glad Gary is letting me do this. It keeps me from fishing all the time. And thank you for your input. You have a really good ear for music, Philip, just like you bring it to the sports. I let you guys talk. I listen all the time, you and Tom and the rest of the guys, you know, so.
Well, music's a universal language, man. That's something we all ought to enjoy. But when Dwayne was killed on that at that intersection, making, you know, the Barry Oakley got killed at the same intersection.
Philip, Barry got killed two blocks over, exactly in November, the middle of November. And he hit a city bus on a curb.
Mm.
Now, Dwayne, the band had cleaned up. They were home on break. They were fixing to play Carnegie Hall. They were beginning to have some good things. They were able to buy cars. They were enjoying life. And Dwayne was just taking a ride to a party, Barry Oakley's wife's birthday party, and that accident happened. The truck stopped in front of him, and Dwayne had to judge what he was, you know, he had that split second, and that boom, when he went around the truck to dodge it, the boom off the back, it was a flatbed, hit him and knocked him. He slid about many, many yards, and then the bike fell on him. They thought he was going to live. They really did. But he was so internally, you know, it's just a bad thing, man. What the guy only had 4 or 5 years here in music, and what he did.
Right.
I mean, it's just phenomenal what he did, you know.
Died when he was 24.
Yep. And that band just so continues to resonate with people, and you're right, great Great musician. All right. Thank you so much, Philip. That's going to wrap it up for our segment for this week. But, Larry, as you pointed out, it was 50. You didn't plan it like this on the calendar, but it was 54 years ago today, 1971, October 29th, that Dwayne Allman was killed in that motorcycle accident.
It was meant to be, brother. It was meant to happen. This is great. This is a good way to finish the month.
Well, thank you, my friend, and we'll be back next week. All right. That's going to do it for the segment. We're going to come back and I'm going to intro us into an interview, and then I'm going to get on to the dentist, and Chase is going to close things out. But I'll stay around to do the intro when we come back, and we'll be right back after this.
At Decades, it's not just food, it's nostalgia served fresh. Decades Pub and Grub, where every bite is a blast from the past, downtown at Timberson Square.
Los Tarascos has been serving Mexican favorites like burritos, fajitas, and quesadillas since 1999. Their new location is at 4100 Owen Parkway in Northport. And of course, you can find Los Tarascos in Tuscaloosa at 110 Skyland Boulevard. The bar areas feature big screen television so you can enjoy your favorite sporting events. Los Tarascos features daily happy.
Learn another language? Save up to 50% on your Babbel subscription when you sign up at Babbel.com. That's Babbel.com to save up to 50%. Babbel.com.
Covering University of Alabama sports, as well as the national and local scene as well. The Gary Harris Show, only on Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
All right, 10:33. Welcome back into the Gary Harris Show. Gary Harris, Chase Brumfield with you. And we're going to play an interview we did yesterday with Corey Reamer, former Alabama football player, 2009 national champion. He is now the sideline reporter for the Crimson Tide Sports Network for Alabama football. Had a great interview with him on the Crimson Tide to this point in the season and his feelings on what is going to happen these next four games and possibly into the college football playoffs. So here's the interview with Corey Reamer, and I'm going to go ahead and check on out, and Chase will be with you once the interview's over to close out the show and get you ready for the Miller's Edge. A reminder, there's no Fridays at the Free this week because of the fact that there is no game. We only do it on the game weekends, home and away, but no Fridays at the Free, so I'll be in studio Friday morning. We will not be doing our Bama football trivia giveaway, courtesy of T-Town Menswear and T-Town Gallery in the University Mall. Still, get by and see Tom for that $99 suit sale that continues at T-Town Menswear and T-Town Gallery in the University Mall. Here's Corey Reamer.
University of Alabama sports, as well as the national and local scene as well. The Gary Harris Show, only on Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
Show. We're going to visit with Corey Reamer, sideline reporter for Alabama football for the Crimson Tide Sports Network, also former Crimson Tide national champion from 2009 under Nick Saban, signed out of Hoover High School by Mike Shula, and has an interesting story about how he wound up at Alabama. We're going to get into all that with Corey this morning. Good morning, Corey. How's it going?
Hey, Gary, what's going on, man?
Hey, doing great, man. Good to have you on. I want to start with your current responsibilities as sideline reporter for the Crimson Tide Sports Network and what you've seen from this Alabama team this year. Going back to that season opener, I think we were all caught off guard because, you know, we'd heard great reports all summer, you know, through the spring about how this team was on the same page. The buy-in was there. The work was there. Everything looked like it was lining up for a great season. And then you go down there to Tallahassee and just get it handed to you, and we're like, oh boy. But that was an outlier. Clearly this team was everything that we thought that they were. You know, you had Gus Malzahn had 6 months to prepare for Alabama. He had a good plan with Castellanos, the quarterback, and they put it on Bama, but boy, the Tide has bounced back nicely.
Yeah, they definitely have. It's been first game definitely caused a lot of concerns for Alabama fans, the team, the coaches. Everybody just kind of was a little bit in shock after the results down in Tallahassee. And like you said, everything leading up to the first game, you know, pointed in the right direction. We saw, you know, this team had a lot of good pieces, but not maybe all the pieces that they needed for this coaching staff to be able to operate this team like they wanted to. And this year, it just seemed like we found those pieces through You know, through the some new guys that were added to the roster, we got the right things in place. The attitude was right. The leadership felt right. Everything seemed good. And so coming out and having that first game and looking like we did against Florida State, it was just kind of a shock to everybody. And I think, unfortunately, you know, sometimes some of the best lessons that you learn are through some tough times, and that loss definitely was a massive learning lesson for this team. Of how to respond to adversity. We didn't do it very well in that game. And you referenced it. You know, Coach Saban even said it before the season started or before we even played this game. It's anytime you've got to prepare for a Gus Malzahn offense, it's very difficult to prepare for, especially if you don't have any tape on what they want to do. And you kind of know, you've seen what he's done at Auburn and UCF and all the other stops that he's been at. But with this roster at Florida State, you didn't have any tape of how they were going to use Tommy Castellanos and what it was going to look like. So preparing for that is very difficult, and you've seen Florida State really struggling as of late. And on top of that, they had, you know, I think around 50 new guys on that roster at Florida State when we played them. So now people have tape on them. It's a little bit easier to game plan for. There's some injuries that they have. They're extremely healthy. They've got a really good defensive front. And all those things kind of played into the struggles that we had. And if you look at Alabama, just at us, not anything outside, you look at every single week from that game until now, how many different combinations of players have we had out there, especially at the O-line position? We've been rotating guys frequently, trying to get who we think are the best five out there, especially on the right side of that offensive line. And it's been kind of a revolving door of players. And so I think that plays into a little bit of, you know, you go into the season thinking you've got the right guys in the right places, but we've been shifting those guys around in game, not just from week to week, but even in game. You saw Michael Carroll being at right tackle, and then you've also seen Wilkin Formby, even this last game against South Carolina. Those guys are changing. I think that makes it tough on, you know, the run game that hasn't been what we would love for the run game to be, and I think it makes it even tough on Ty getting comfortable of knowing who his guys are that are in front of him. So kudos to this Ryan Grubb and to this offense of finding ways to be successful with all of the changes that they've had, especially starting at that offensive line unit. But since then, they've responded really well. You know, this pass game was one that was also a struggle on that side of the football, and we hadn't seen that. You know, we went through four games of ranked teams, ranked opponents on the road, at home, and the offense was really, you know, clicking on a very high level. And then we go to South Carolina, and it looked more like the Florida State game from an offensive standpoint until late in that fourth quarter. And they made plays when they needed to be made to win that ball game. But it kind of was reminiscent of that first game of not finding that rhythm, that flow, putting together those 5, 6, 7 minute drives. But they found a way to win the ball game, and a lot of that credit has to go to the defense as well, who's been playing at a really high level, especially these last few weeks, against some pretty tough offenses. Not this past weekend, but they did enough to keep South Carolina out of the end zone when they had to, and got points themselves, which helped, you know, definitely helped get us in the win column this weekend.
Corey Reamer with us from the Crimson Tide Sports Network. Yeah, you did a good job of laying that out. So you get past Florida State, and I do think the schedule has helped. And hear me out, because it's been tough. I'm not saying that. But you play in 12 games, so you get the double bye. You're able to come home against Monroe, hang 73 on them. Then you get Wisconsin from the Big Ten, beat them 30-14. Then you get your first bye ahead of this incredible five-game stretch that just completed. At Georgia, home against Vanderbilt, at Missouri, at home against Tennessee, and out South Carolina. And you could see, like you said, by this last game, after those four ranked opponents, there was, you know, looked like they were running out of gas a little bit. But you were able to sell them, I think, the coaching staff, that, hey, just give me one more week, and we get to another bye. You go through that unscathed, which is remarkable, to 5-0 in that stretch. Now you get to kind of reset hit the reset button again for this stretch at home against LSU, Oklahoma, and Eastern Illinois, then the Iron Bowl at Auburn. So the schedule, while difficult, these byes strategically placed where they're at have really, I think, helped Alabama a lot.
Yeah, they needed it so bad this week. And, you know, after going through that, you've got some guys that are obviously injured. We've been battling injury, especially, you know, with Jam Miller at running back to start the season. And then he gets a little banged up in that Missouri game, but you've lost a couple guys on the defensive side of the ball. But not only those guys, but just the amount of just being dinged up, just being, you're just tired. Your body's tired. You need some time to recover, especially with the physical games that we've been playing. You know, this is not, that five game stretch was not games where we went in there and just absolutely dominated and you're able to rest your starters in the second half. I mean, we've been fighting tooth and nail to get these wins for some of these games. It was outside of, I think Tennessee was the only one that we really had in hand. It felt like, even though it did take, you know, late into the second half to get to that point, to play all the way till the clock hit zeros, where we have done that in most of these other games. So you haven't had a chance to rest your starters and get some of these backup guys in there to get some reps. And so it takes a toll. I mean, it's just a physical schedule. It's a tough schedule for anybody, especially in the SEC when you've got this many ranked opponents. And in South Carolina, although their record is not good, their offense has not been great. Their defense has been extremely good. That is the unit of that team that has held it together for the South Carolina team and kept them in ball games to where they're not getting necessarily blown out. You know, they've created a bunch of turnovers. It was a tough test for this offense. Two guys on the edge that caused a lot of problems for Ty Simpson in the passing game as well. And you saw how it affected us. We just couldn't get any flow going. But yeah, massive, massive advantage right now for us to finally get that bye week. And you see what these teams, a lot of these teams that we've played this year so far, they had their bye week right before they played us. And you can kind of see how fresh those teams come out, and they're ready to go. They've had a chance to rest before they play Alabama, and we just haven't had that. So this is huge. Get some guys to let their bodies heal up a little bit to go on this last stretch that's just going to be as difficult as the one we just went on. Albeit just one less game. You only got four games left. But really, you know what the Iron Bowl represents, and you know that Auburn has improved throughout this year. They're making changes at quarterback. Their defense has been really, really solid. But you've also got Oklahoma and LSU, which we know what those matchups are going to look like.
Corey Reamer with us. I want to ask you about Ty Simpson because, again, he'd been around here going into his fourth year. We know he's a five-star out of high school. Know he played for, you know, his dad's a college coach. So he came up in a coaching family. And we knew he was talented, but he had never done it before. He never started a game. And I think we all felt like he was ready. But did you ever, Corey, imagine that he would play at the level he's playing at as a serious Heisman Trophy candidate in his first year as a starter? I mean, he still only started eight games in his college career.
No, I don't think anybody expected this. I mean, maybe somebody that, you know, internally that watches them every day. We've gotten to see him a few times last year throughout the season, that South Florida game. And I don't think anybody anticipated that this marriage between Ty Simpson and Ryan Grubb was going to look as good as it has so far. And he is, you know, sometimes quarterback looks really good just because of the system they're in, but the plays that Ty Simpson is making, the decisions that he's making, the accuracy that he's throwing the football with, his ability to keep his eyes down the field when he feels pressure in the pocket or when he needs to escape out of the pocket to extend plays. Nobody anticipated him to, you know, there's probably somebody that did, but it definitely wasn't me. You know, I thought he was a good quarterback. I thought he was going to really thrive in this system. And I was excited about what this offense is going to look like this year with him at the helm versus what we had last year with Jalen trying to run this offense. In no way, shape, or form did I ever expect to see the level of play that he has had so far this season. I mean, being that close and watching some of these throws that he's making, and it'd be one thing if it was just here, one there. But, I mean, he's putting the ball in places that only the receiver can get the ball. And it's a little bit of a cliche, but he does it over and over again. I mean, that play against Tennessee out of the back of the end zone last week when he has pressure but absolutely just throws a dime to Ryan Williams, and that DB had great coverage. And there's only one place where the football could go, and he places it there. And he does it almost consistently all the time in every single game. This past weekend, I think he just got a little bit out of rhythm and missed a few easy opportunities that he usually doesn't miss. But yeah, it's been fun to watch. I mean, he is a competitor. He doesn't seem very fazed by what happens in the game. His mental toughness is next level, which you don't, you know, you've kind of lost the art of guys that can, you know, have the confidence in themselves. When things go bad, they just go back to the bench. They get their corrections. They let that go and they continue to go out there and play. And he's got all these intangibles as well as the physical ability that you'd love to see out of a quarterback.
The staff, bringing Ryan Grubb back. Corey, let me ask you about this dynamic because it just seems like it just works great. You've got an offensive-minded head coach. And we know in the first season, the plan was for Ryan Grubb to be the coordinator. He went back to Seattle to take the Seahawks offensive coordinator job. I thought Nick Sheridan stepped in and did a nice job. But now you have DeBoer, you have Grubb in the press box calling the plays, and you've got Sheridan as the quarterback's coach down on the field working with Ty. It just seems like it's, you know, it's kind of the way it was designed in the first place, you know, with Grubb to be the play caller. And I thought Nick Sheridan, who's a brilliant young coach, did a terrific job last year. But now this staff offensively, they give defensive coordinators fits trying to prepare for.
Yeah, I mean, their creativity and the timing of when they call the plays that need to be called, the route concepts that they have that really put defenses in a bind. I can't imagine being a coordinator and having to game plan for this style of an offense. And you saw last week on the 2-point conversion play, you know, they just got stuff up their sleeve. They're prepared for any moment. They know. You know, and I think the difference, Nick Sheridan is a great coach and is a great offensive mind. I think he was kind of working with one hand tied behind his back last year in who he had on the field trying to execute this offense. And it Michael Penix was a phenomenal quarterback at Washington who has he's not a guy that uses his legs to run an offense. He has the ability to, he is athletic, but he was so good at reading defenses and understanding how the offense was built to work. And we just didn't have that last year in Jalen Milroe. Jalen is probably, if you put him on any field, NFL or college, he's probably the best athlete that is on the field at any given time, even at the NFL level. But his strengths were not the strengths that these coaches would love to see for them to execute the offense that they want to execute. And I think Ty is exactly the guy that has the ability to go out there and do what these coaches want to do. And the reason they call these plays, they know what they're looking for, and Ty sees it on the field in real time as well. And they're just, hopefully we can keep the band together, you know. And I think these guys that are behind Ty that are going to be coming up, if we can, I think all these guys have the ability to execute the playbook just like Ty is. But both those coaches, Nick Sheridan and Ryan Grubb, I've watched in a Missouri game, the Tennessee game, you know, even this past weekend, just the play calling and the creativity and the design of route concepts of how they get these DBs to get so crisscrossed and they don't know who to take, especially at a bunch set. And they put pressure when you've got a cover two look, put pressure on the safety to make a decision. You put pressure on the corner to make a decision. And you've got a guy running, you know, streaking right down the middle in between the seams, and he's wide open. And it's like, man, what a brilliant play call at the right time of the game. You knew probably what you were going to get from a coverage look. And to call that and to, you know, execute it as well as they have, it's been incredible.
This final stretch run that I mentioned at home against LSU without Brian Kelly, Oklahoma, Eastern Illinois, then at the Iron Bowl. Do you think Bama can run the table here and get it to 11-1, 8-0 in the SEC and go to Atlanta for the SEC championship game?
There.
All right, yeah, Corey, I was just saying this final stretch run that we mentioned earlier with LSU minus Brian Kelly, Oklahoma, Eastern Illinois, and at Auburn for the Iron Bowl. You think Bama can run the table? Well, we lost him completely. All right, I tell you what, maybe we can get him back on. Let's go ahead and take a break. Try to get Corey back on, and we'll finish this up. We'll also try to squeeze in a phone call. We'll see if we can get Corey back. We lost him there for a moment. We'll be right back on the Gary Harris Show.
Download the free Tide 100.9 app today.
couple of minutes. The phone gremlins bit us there with Corey Reamer, but we want to get him back on to finish this out. So don't know what happened, Corey, but good to have you back. What I was saying before we lost you was Alabama now is set up for this stretch run that we mentioned. LSU without Brian Kelly, Oklahoma, Eastern Illinois at home, and then at Auburn for the Iron Bowl. Do you think they can run the table, get it to 8-0 in the SEC, 11-1 overall, and get to Atlanta for the SEC championship game, and basically will have already wrapped up a spot in the college football playoff?
Yeah, I think they definitely can. They've shown that this team is they've improved every week, and I heard you've heard it every single week in the locker room after the games. You know, this is we have not put our best football forward yet. We haven't done it. We haven't played that complete game where we just go out and dominate from start to finish on both sides of the football, and that's got to be terrifying for everybody else that we face. You know, I think that we're hitting the right strides, and we've faced some adversity and had some games that didn't go our way. I mean, this tested us this past weekend against South Carolina, tested this team in a really tough way, put the defense on the field for a lot. They were found a way to get stops, keep South Carolina out of the end zone. They've been playing really well, and this offense, I feel like, you know, this was a good test for them to go through. And towards the end of the game, they believed in themselves, found a way to make plays to win the ball game. But yeah, you look at what the remaining schedule looks like. You know, you got LSU without Brian Kelly. You know the history of any team that comes out right after their head coach is fired. It's another situation where it's going to be tough because now, not that you have to throw all the tape of what you've seen out from this season so far, but you know that this new coaching staff are going to come out, maybe play with a little bit of more intensity than they would have since their head coach has now been fired. Probably unexpectedly from these players. A lot of these players, you know, liked Brian Kelly. I think it's going to be a tough test. Plus just what this matchup means without all of that going on. But we get them at home. Oklahoma has been playing really well. We saw them struggle this past week against Ole Miss. Ole Miss, they would put up a lot of points on this Brent Venables defense. But Brent Venables is a good coach, and John Mateer is one of those quarterback styles that gives, you know, has given us fits in the past. You know, but I think this defense is coming into their own. They're finding ways. You know, they might not get stops in between the 20s, but finding ways to get stops when offenses get in the red zone, they've been really efficient at that from that standpoint. And then I think Auburn's going to be a really tough test on the road. This team is starting to play a little bit better. Like I said earlier, their defense is really, really good. And their offense, you know, a change of quarterback this past weekend, and things might look different. It's not going to be easy. No. It's going to be a tough test.
Never, three games. Never is, as you know. All right, we're getting up against the clock, but yeah. I mentioned you're coming out of Hoover High School. Huge Auburn family. Tommy Tuberville did not recruit you. Mike Shula did. So you wind up at Alabama. Then Nick Saban comes in, and Tom, one of our great callers, called in and said he wanted you to say if this was a true story. Of course, we know Nick Saban recruited to the critical factors, just like in the NFL, height, weight, you know, speed for certain positions. Did he tell you on the practice field one day that he would have never recruited you, or is that just an urban legend?
No, it's true. And it's something that he even told the media as well. I think it was maybe after the Ole Miss game my senior year, I think he even said to the media, I had a great game on special teams and on defense. Mm-hmm. And I think he mentioned it during the
he did. I remember it now.
Yeah. This is not a guy that came on staff that we ever probably expected to play here, but here he is.
Your last season,
that's the way you got to play.
Yeah, all you did was go for 50 tackles, 7 tackles for loss, 2 sacks, forced fumble, interception, and a block kick. And you guys won the national championship. So it all worked out in the end, didn't it, Corey?
It definitely did.
Hey, thanks. Go finish your thought.
I just saying, you know, it was an honor to play for him, but he told me pretty quickly, like you said, you know, I was trying to play safety coming off of 2 ACL surgeries, and he said, you know, we need safeties that can bend at the hip, knees, and ankles, and you can't do any of it. So if you want to play on this team, you better put some weight on and get in the box, play linebacker, and so that's what we had to do and found a way to get on the field and contribute to 2 pretty good teams.
Yeah, you did. Got up to 230-plus pounds, man. Hey, great. And the Reamer family's Alabama now. Thank you, Corey.
That's exactly right. Appreciate it.
All right, man. That's going to wrap it up for this edition of the Gary Harris Show, The Miller's Edge. Coming up next. Have a great day, everybody.